this is background. I do not have any commercial interest relationships to disclose. And by the time I finish my presentation, I hope that you'll be able to describe the components of the methodological approach that I used, which was a bit of an innovation for this project, as well as be able to compare the outcomes associated with high and low functioning congregation teams in a project intended to affect HIV prevention care and treatment in rural Uganda. As background, I work for Tulane University, but I have been seconded to World Vision United States for the last 2 years to help them with a global research initiative of their community-based approach to development. And that research project has looked at their programming in 5 different countries. And one of the sites that I was responsible for was a program in Uganda, in rural Uganda, where the red dot is here, South Central Uganda. It was a long-term, multi-sectoral community development project that was focused on child well-being, and it ran from 1999 to 2014. And in the midst of this program cycle, there was an HIV-related project because this area of Uganda was particularly affected by the HIV crisis. The generalized HIV epidemic peaked there in the early 1990s at about 13% among the adult population, and it leveled to about 7% by the year 2008, and it stayed at about that level. Also, as background, it's important to note that in this area of Uganda, it's a multi-faith community. It's primarily Christian, about 80 or 85% Christian, and then the other 15 or so percent Muslim. World Vision is a Christian organization, although it works with people of any faith. Their response to the HIV crisis there was to work with churches and faith-based communities in a project that was called the Channels of Hope Project. The reason that they targeted churches and faith-based communities was because they provide an opportunity to mobilize around infrastructure. There's an organizational capacity there within churches or faith-based organizations. There's a ready pool of volunteers. People are already networked and they know each other. And also they could leverage the unmatched moral authority of churches or mosques or religious leaders to talk to their congregations about helping people in their communities affected by HIV. I have a schematic here that's sort of the basics of the project, but the idea was that World Vision reached out in this area to all of the churches and mosques and invited religious leaders to come to a multi-day sensitization event where they talked about how HIV affected the community and the unique role that religious leaders could play in distributing prevention messaging, as well as mobilizing their congregations to reach out to people affected by HIV. So the first step was sensitization among the targeted churches and faith-based organization leaders. And the idea was that they would send the leaders who were on board to join this project model back to their congregations, and they would work with their congregations to form small teams. They were called Community Hope Action Teams. The teams then and the leaders would return for a multi-day training that was on all things HIV, so the epidemiology and transmission patterns, as well as prevention methodologies and the types of care and support that people and families affected by HIV could really use. And the idea was that then these groups would go back to their churches and perform various outreach activities. That could be home visits, it could be linkages to other service providers in the community to provide food or clothing to affected families. And they were really, these groups did perform also prevention activities, for example, organizing voluntary counseling and testing sessions for their congregations. But more so, they were really working with families that were already affected by HIV, and with a focus on vulnerable children, because that's what World Vision focuses its programs on, as well as the chronically ill. So I was performing an evaluation of this massive multi-sectoral program, not just the HIV component. So there was an education project and agriculture and livelihoods development project. But one question that I had to try to answer was, what was the long-term impact of the HIV project? And I was pretty limited in answering that question, because there had not been a strong baseline that was really focused uniquely around that project. The monitoring data were fairly limited. And just the resourcing to look at that particular component was also very limited. I would have preferred to perform some, community surveys. I didn't really have the resources to do that. So what I did was I appropriated a methodology that has been used more widely in the human resources training literature. It's called the success case method. And it's usually performed at the individual level. It is a way of analyzing extreme groups and then developing case studies. In the human resources literature, it's used to look at why people who go through training then use the training back at work or not. Okay, and here I was using it to see, why did congregations that formed the teams, what did they end up doing back in their communities? How did they benefit or not their communities? And why or why not did they sustain their activities? Because we'd like to see, in the absence of funding, that the activities are continuing. So the blue boxes here on this slide are sort of the typical success case method approach. If you look in the human resources literature, this is very standard. And my bullet points out to the right are how I sort of adapted this model here. So usually there's a survey that's fielded to define, to measure and identify success. So in the human resources training literature, this is done among individuals. But I was reaching out to groups of people, these chats, these community hope action teams. And there had been 28 formed in this community. 24 of them responded. I had 4 non-responses, even though we attempted lots of follow-up. Usually the survey is, in the human resources literature, it's 1 or 2 questions long. Did you use the training? And a little bit about the training. In my case, I expanded slightly. I used 15 items because, like I said, I was lacking a lot of monitoring data on this project, so I wanted the opportunity to learn what were the outputs of these groups. But I also had some key questions on the survey that it would allow me to identify successful and non-successful groups. And using those questions, 2 questions in particular, I dichotomized into high and low performing groups. The 2 questions that I used, and I decided upon these based on the objectives of the project, were: I wanted to know, when we surveyed in 2014, were these groups continuing to make home visits to families affected by HIV, because this was a core activity that they had were intended to be performing. And I wanted to know whether they had organized into a formal organization. When I dichotomized, I actually those that met both criteria, yes to both of those questions, they were my high performers, and those that had no to both questions, those were my low performing groups. And I did have some middle performing that were doing one or the other, but I didn't examine them. They were not at the extreme ends of the spectrum. But from the extremes, the high and low performers, I then took a random sample that I would follow up with some qualitative case studies. This included focus groups among the group members, as well as in-depth interviews with people living in the communities, congregation members, who could have been affected, impacted by the group activities. And here's some of the findings from that brief quantitative survey. And this table is sort of split into information about their former activities, as well as the current activities. And you'll notice some differences between the high and low performers. You'll also notice some similarities. One of the big differences was around the size of these Congregation Hope Action Teams. The people that had volunteered to join and go out to their congregations, there's a large, fairly large difference between the size of the teams, with the high performing teams having more members, and the lower performing teams having fewer members. And I think when we look at some of the other findings, we'll see that the size of the groups does matter in terms of activities. But their activities ever were sort of similar. They had plans for their activities. They were coordinating with other groups in the community for outreach and care linkages. They were organizing voluntary counseling and testing sessions for their congregations. Then we see more recently a drop-off in activity. So the low-performing groups were not really continuing to meet. They were not conducting home visits. They were not providing food or clothing or continuing to make linkages to organizations in the community. And if we look at efforts to sustain their activities, what I found was really interesting was the high and low performers all had tried to obtain funding, and actually even the low performers, half of them had obtained funding to sustain their activities, and for whatever reason, they didn't continue their activities. So when we had the opportunity in those focus groups to learn more about their reasons for high and low success, what the low success groups told us was they believed that compared to the higher success teams, they had fewer resources within their congregations and within their communities. They said the best performers mobilized more resources. They had people in their congregations, key resourceful persons who are financially stable and could help support the activities. They pointed out that even among their teams, they as individual members in their teams were not very well off. They had bad situations where they were struggling with household poverty or food insecurity, so it was very difficult to perform outreach to other families affected. And they also said, and I wonder to what extent this was true or was a rationalization, but they said that they believed their communities had grown less interested in receiving their support. That's what they told us. Now, when we talked to community members, that final point really wasn't substantiated so much. We heard from community members that all along the lower functioning teams, the lower success teams, had been making fewer home visits and were delivering less direct material support. And the community members from low success congregations were saying more effort should continue to be put into visiting us. They did need the services. The similarities, though, that we saw around true outcomes for affected families were that among high and low success congregations, we saw high reporting of reduced stigma, we saw high reporting of increased community caring, and we saw just so much evidence of these congregation members feeling a sense of hope and well-being. In the final quote here, you know, that assistance helped me to have my mind settled. I knew that someone cared for me. In the past, people never wanted to associate with you. Most of my worries and thoughts went away. We saw so many quotes like this that they just felt so cared for that someone in their church or their mosque would come visit them on a semi-regular basis and even just talk to them. So in conclusion, we decided that this was a very effective model for promoting community care and support, where there was evidence of direct well-being benefits, transformed relationships, reduced stigma, and emergence of hope in the communities. But we did see differences between high and low performers, particularly with regard to sustained activity, and I think that has a lot to do with the number of people that are convening as volunteers in the first place, their ability to continue to spend time and mobilize resources in the absence of program support was a challenge, and should be considered in future iterations of this project. Thank you.